Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 115 for comics originally released on October 21st, 2009. Starting us off in DC is Azrael number 1. This is by Fabian Nicieza, who I don't know that we've really been seeing a whole lot of comics out of him lately, but for at one point he was just all over the place.
So, yeah. More at Marvel, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was doing, it felt like half the Marvel lineup at one point. He did some of the early New Warriors, which is where I think a lot of people would know him from, did quite a few Mutant books. And by and large, he tends to be a fairly good writer. He also did some stuff over at Valiant or Acclaim at one point with their reboot of their stuff. So I was happy to see him on as a writer here. But it kind of felt like it'd been a little while since that miniseries during Battle for the Cowl, and it has been a couple of months. And for me, that kind of killed any story or character momentum. You know, they establish the character, then they let him languish for a couple of months, then they come out with the series. And it's like, well, this might have worked better for me if it was hot on the heels of that miniseries.
I don't know if that would have helped me. I was a little bit on the fence about the mini that came out as part of Battle of the Cowl, and I felt pretty much the same way at this one. This did nothing particularly for me. I think a lot of it had to do with the art by Ramon Box. It just, nothing wrong with it. It just wasn't striking me. I mean, the style is just not one that was resonating with me. Not bad art. It just wasn't grabbing me.
There is something about the art, because I felt the same way, and I was having a really hard time kind of putting my finger on what it was about it. And like, there's the one page where Azrael's kind of doing that roll on the rooftop going into the police station or whatever. And it's not badly drawn, although I question how he could do the roll with two swords on him. But there's something that's kind of blocky or stiff about it. It doesn't have the graceful flow or whatever that one might expect on this kind of an art. You know what I mean?
It's got, you know what it feels like to me? It's got kind of like a European crime comic feel to it that just doesn't work for me with superheroes in it. If this was like,
the tough PI kind of thing?
Exactly, a tough PI kind of comic or something like that, that wasn't a superhero comic, I think that the style would work just fine for me. But this style with the superheroes running around in it just doesn't quite work for me. That's a personal thing. It's not a indictment of Ramon's artwork in any way. I mean, because it's actually good art. I like the art. It just, something about it is not clicking with me on this book.
I almost want to relate it to kind of that Uncanny Valley situation that you can have with like a 3D movie. Like the Polar Express kind of had this, where it's fairly realistic, but not realistic enough, and there's a little gap there where you keep expecting it to be like normal people or whatever, but the motion's just a hair off or something like that, and it's really kind of awkward or whatever. And that's kind of what I'm seeing here. This is good art. He's got some good flow between the panels. He's doing some cool stuff. The individual panels are well drawn, but it's close enough to what I would consider kind of traditional superhero art for a DC book, yet just a hair off, that it's kind of like having a steering wheel that's just slightly out of alignment. You can drive just fine, a perfectly functional car or whatever, but it's just nagging at you at an almost subliminal level. And I don't think everyone's going to have that problem, but certainly I felt that kind of that same way too.
And on the story, I'm not clicking with this incarnation of Azrael, the whole suit of sorrows thing and the motivation behind the Azrael. is not, you know, kind of like the, I don't know, the revenge aspect is a little more mundane. It's one of these ones where you'll usually say it's neither fish nor fowl, where it's like, it's a superhero book, but it's not a superhero book. You know, it's not enough in the superhero world. He's doing too mundane a stuff with it.
It's funny because I didn't really feel that way. I kind of felt that it's unfortunate this character is based in Gotham, in so much as he's got that religious vigilante kind of a thing going on, which to me almost makes him kind of a knockoff of Moon Knight, who's kind of a knockoff on Batman on certain levels. And certainly that's harsh on almost all three characters, but you know what I mean. So it feels like it's a fairly derivative concept, and then not only putting it in Gotham, but actually having Batman make a cameo here kind of underscores that fact. And to me, it was superhero-y enough in tone, style, and what they're trying to do, but I agree, it does have that revenge motivation thing that's just not really sold. You know, for me, I thought this was not a bad first issue, but I also didn't think it was a great one. It didn't sell me on either the concept or the character of Azrael. Both were in here. We got a really quick thing on the basic backstory, but not really a strong pitch for why we should care about the costume or the guy in it. So, you know, I like the miniseries enough that I'm going to ride this out for a bit, but frankly, I do not expect this to last more than a year, particularly based on this. I don't think there's enough of a following for the character, or even the name of the character, you know, going back to the Azrael that went for 100 issues. And it's just a tough marketplace. I don't know that they've established this as a unique enough title to differentiate it from everything else coming out of the Batman office. You know? So I'm curious how well this is gonna do. I expect it to be a middling title at best in terms of sales. Cause this kind of felt bland to me and almost like a by the numbers kind of quote unquote filler series of, hey, we got another slot to put a book out. Let's try this. You know?
Yeah, for me, it falls below the bar of, you know, me being willing to pick up any more issues of the series. I was like, you know, it wasn't a terrible story, but it wasn't good. It wasn't grabbing me. And it's one of these ones that I'll be relegated to my, if I see the issues in a bin somewhere, I'll pick them up. But if I don't, I won't be heartbroken that I didn't get them.
I can see that. For me, the one thing that actually did kind of turn me off was you get that opening double page splash on the second and third pages, and you've got these insets of another scene that are 6 months, 6 days, and 9 hours from now, whereas the main stuff is now. This whole dual time frame storytelling thing, I know it was popular because of Lost, other shows are trying it, whatever. It's kind of played out for me, you know? I didn't care for the jumping between the two time frames. I didn't think it added anything to the story. And, you know, I suspect a lot of people are going to have kind of the same reaction you did of, it's okay, but I don't feel the need to get more.
The same thing with, I mean, even more than at the beginning was at the end. And, you know, the kind of cliffhanger, you know, quote-unquote, of the story with the same 6 days, 6 months, 6 days, and 6 hours, you know, where they're trying to do a 666 thing, I guess. You know, I looked at that, and it's like maybe supposed to say, ooh, well, what happens in the next 6 days, 6 months, you know, that's going to cause this scene to happen? And it's like, I'm like, I don't really care, you know.
Well,
how many issues is it going to take to get through those 6 months, you know, that'll be the end of the series.
I kind of suspect that this may turn out to be a 6-issue series. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, I really liked the Batman Doc Savage preview art by Phil Noto.
I don't really consider that, you know, part of this book in so much as I've seen it in a few other places, but yeah, that does look nice. The art
I really
great.
Like Phil Noto's art, and it's another one where it's just some art, it's very subjective, you know, some art just kind of hits you in a way that you're like, wow, that's really nice art. And Phil Noto certainly has a different style, but it's one that I like. So I'm looking forward to that book.
I was really curious how they were going to mix Doc Savage and Batman and stuff like that, but based on this, I'm very excited about it. Overall, I gave this issue a 3. I thought it was okay. I certainly think they could have and should have started stronger for a new series, and I suspect that a lot of people, like I said, are going to have the same reaction you did it was okay, but not feeling the need to get more. I'm going to write it out, but frankly, I don't expect it to last long.
Given that I'm not continuing with it, I was kind of like on the low 3, high 2 border, so I'll give it the 2, just because if it was a 3 for me, I probably would have come back for issue 2.
That's fair. I can see that. And I'm not saying mine was a high 3 either, you know what I mean? Again, it's just kind of there. Part of it is I guess I expect a little better out of Nietzsche because he's done some really great stuff over the years. This struck me as just kind of a doing a paycheck kind of a thing. There's nothing wrong with that, but I don't feel this was his A game. You know what I mean?
I don't remember if he wrote the miniseries or not.
I don't remember.
Yeah, because there's a difference with whether he's continuing with something that he created back in Battle of the Cowl or if he's just stepping in and picking up. So
I didn't get the impression he felt passionate about the character in either case.
So our next book is Dark Avengers number 10 from Marvel. More Norman Osborn craziness.
Yeah, this book is kind of, to me, just a continuation of Thunderbolts, not really an Avengers series, but it's a good one by and large. You know, I thought enough happened in this issue to really satisfy me in terms of, you know, starting a story, getting some other action scenes, moving some characterization along, and just kind of really starting the story arc. You know, the scene in Louisiana was kind of almost a I don't want to say a throwaway scene, but it's not something that really...
It was a throwaway scene.
Well, it wasn't pivotal to this issue, but it does kind of tie it into the whole List plot line to a certain degree.
I don't know what Man-Thing did to piss off Norman Osborn, but...
Gateway Realities, if he knows that, although I'm not sure how he would know that, although I guess S.H.I.E.L.D. Archives would have that, you know, that would be enough to say, hey, let's, you know, knock that player out of the game kind of thing. You know, I liked what happened with the Sentry here, but I know they're going to backpedal on that. There's no way they can't. The whole bit they were doing with Scorpion here being off his meds or whatever was there. It didn't really work for me. It's like, all right, enough, move on. There were a couple of panels on not the ending two-page splash, which I thought was just great and a strong ending, but the 2 pages prior to that. I really wasn't sure kind of where they were going with a couple of those panels. But, you know, the ending I thought was a really strong one, and, you know, I'm looking forward to that next issue. And that's, to me, you know, that's what I ask out of a comic. A nice good beginning of something, some good middle of something, and a good end of something, you know. And I felt this really delivered.
Yeah, I love Mike Diodata's art. He's got a very dynamic superhero art style. It works really well for me. And Bendis, you know, Bendis generally tells a good story. So this is a book that I've liked since the beginning. Yet not as much happens in any given issue than some other writers, but it's kind of like Bendis's style, so I don't mind it particularly. You know, it's just that's the way he tells a story. So there are key things that happen in the issue. It's just I always, when I read one of his stories, I always feel like more stuff probably could have happened in that issue. You know what I mean?
I feel that way about some of his other stuff, but this one, I guess I got enough both action, story progression, and characterization that it didn't feel as decompressed as some of his other stuff. I mean, I'm not going to say it's as tight as it possibly could have been, because let's face it, the entire story arc going on here 20 years ago probably would have been just an issue or two, not, you know, however many this is going to play out over. But you know, I felt they covered a meaningful enough chunk of story here. In his more decompressed stuff, I think we would have basically just gotten the sheer setup of the story and none of kind of the side stuff back at Avengers Tower or in Louisiana or some of this other stuff. And it would have just been an opening teaser for the story. Whereas, again, I felt we got more here than that.
I could see that. I kind of think that, you know, a lot of other writers, if you set up this thing in the town, you would have gotten them into the town and had something happen other than the little tiny thing that happened with Sentry and mostly having most of the Force flying towards the town.
Well, my impression on the not the last two pages, but right before that, is they actually got to town and some stuff happened. I was just a little unclear as to what happened.
Well, and my point is that you would have gotten to town and seen some stuff happen.
True. They would have done more than just land. They would have at least, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, these days, that kind of a thing is almost standard fare of, you know, get to that first major plot point at best in the first issue. Sometimes it takes a ways into the second. So. I gave this a 4. I thought it was a good, strong issue. I like the art, like the story, like the characters. Curious to see where they're going to go with it. I did find it interesting that Marvel Boy was on the cover, but not in the issue. But kind of, who cares? and of course, we never see the team in anything remotely like this, what, industrial building kind of a thing like they have on the cover? But, yeah, whatever.
Long ago given up expecting anything on the cover to have bearing on the story.
I know. I'm an old school optimist, what can I say?
So, I gave it a 4 also. I didn't dislike it. I thought it was an above-average book. I liked the art, liked the story. I'll be back next issue.
Cool.
I'm not completely convinced that it's worth $3.99, but, you know, it's a good $2.99 comic.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of a good $2.99 comic, our next book is Invincible 67. And, you know, this is Kirkman's superhero title and really beyond, you know, behind Walking Dead, you know, one of his best. Interestingly, this issue has no Invincible nor any of the main supporting cast. It features Invincible's dad and Alan the Alien. And, you know, normally it's one of those things where you don't have the lead character or any of his supporting cast or whatever, and it's like, well, is that any good? I thought this was a great issue. You know, they did some good stuff with these two characters. They're really setting up the whole, you know, Vultramite war, you know, fairly well. I felt quite a bit happened here. I think they could have reestablished the scene a little stronger at the beginning of the story, because it took me a little bit to remember. It's like, now, where did they leave off? And then by about the third page, it's like, oh, yeah, now I remember. I think as a standalone issue, this works acceptably. You're not going to get, obviously, the big picture of what's going on here, but you'd be able to enjoy this issue by itself, I think. They have mention of Tech Jacket, which was a miniseries Kirkman did many years ago, which I liked. I thought it was good. But if it hadn't have been for that footnote pointing that out, the reference would have been lost on me entirely.
Same way. I read Tech Jacket when it came out, but I wouldn't have caught that either.
The only thing about this that I found just slightly distracting and not really needed was the knockoff Next Generation cameo. You know, they're only in there for like 2 or 3 panels, so it's not a big deal, but it's like, you know, couldn't come up with anything more creative than that. Overall,
oh, yeah,
go ahead.
I see that. Yeah. I didn't even parse that when that came on. Now that I flip back, oh, okay, that's Picard.
It's Picard. You've got Download as the name of Data. You've clearly got Worf in the background there. That's again, yeah. It's not a big deal, but it's like, I don't know, it just felt, again, trite and unoriginal, and I know Kirkman's better than that based on all the other stuff he's done. And other times when he's done referencing and stuff like that with the Strontium Dog stuff, it's been either obscure enough or whatever that it hasn't been distracting, but it's, hey, okay, that's kind of cool. I thought this was fun. I thought they covered a lot of ground. Overall, I gave this a 4 out of 5. Good, strong stuff, as I expect from Kirkman.
I loved the scenes where Mighty Man is on the couch, expression on his face, holding the pillows on his head. They showed that like several times on Alan the Alien's couch.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one of these characterization things I like. And one thing I didn't like about this issue was the Image United prelude at the back. It served to me anyway of saying, geez, I'm glad I didn't order Image United because this 4-page thing is doing absolutely nothing for me. It's chapter 3 of 4, which, you know, I'd have to be reading 2 other Image books that I don't read to have gotten the first 2 chapters. It's number 4 is continued in another Image book that I don't get. So it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to rush out and buy those Image books. And on top of that, I'm not going to get the Image United series when it comes out.
I'm going to get the Image United series. I'm very curious how they're going to balance the different art styles and artists on a page and stuff. But I'm doing it more out of curiosity than anything else. I'm in the same boat, though. I hadn't read either Savage Dragon 153 or Witchblade 131. So this was the first, you know, chapter of this Image United prelude. And it's like, I felt I was coming in the middle of the movie and, as a result, didn't really give a crap about what was going on. So I don't think this is working out as effectively as possible.
Yep. That's exactly, you know, exactly the feeling that I had. And it's just like, really? Okay. But, you know, that's the kind of thing where when you have something like this, it seems to me like the purpose of it is to drive interest and excitement from someone who reads only one of those books to then go and buy the crossover. And it's not doing that for me anyway. So,
well, and frankly, since it's being written by Kirkman, wouldn't it make sense to have the first chapter be in one of the books written by Kirkman?
Well, or at least having each chapter have something that's comprehensible to the person, to the book that it's in. You know, so it's like I read this chapter and it's like I have no idea what's going on. It's got nothing to do with anything that has any context with Invincible. You know, so it's like I'm just looking at it and it's like, okay. You know, it's like, don't care.
Yeah. I think they, again, like you said, could have done a number of things that would have been more effective, such as maybe this would be how Invincible or some other character of Kirkman's gets hooked into the Image United storyline.
Right. So it seemed to me like what it really is, it's 4 pages that are just meant to, you know, be part of the 16-page prelude that's going to later on be collected somewhere else, so who cares, you know, how it flows to the book that it's going to be in.
I think they do well, though, to take those 16 pages, do them as kind of a free giveaway, much like Marvel does as those saga things when they're doing some of their events. Because I think more people would pick that up, they'd get the full 16 pages, be able to follow it, hopefully, and therefore get more interested in the Image United.
Mm-hmm.
I also didn't like how the Image United Prelude Part 3 of 4 was at the top of the cover. Because I was reading this and, you know, not really paying attention, but you saw the 3 of 4, it's Invincible, okay, we're partway into a story. And then at the bottom, it's really, this is part 2 of 2 for this main story. It just, I mean, I get why they put it on the top for visibility and stuff like that, but, I don't know, a little, not misleading, because it's fairly clear once you actually read it, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Again, I gave the issue a 4 out of 5. I thought it was good, strong stuff. If you're not reading Invincible, it's worth checking out.
I gave it a 4 also.
Cool.
There we have it. So what else did you get this week?
Let's see. I got 33 other comics. I got that Waiting Place graphic novel. The only stuff I've had time to read was JSA versus Cobra, which I continue to enjoy. Darkest Night Superman, which I thought was really good. And that Justice League issue, which was good stuff, too.
I got the Anchor number one. I got a bunch of comics. The ones that I read this week, though, said I didn't read that many. But I did read the Anchor number one, which was a first issue from Phil Hester coming out of Boom. And I really enjoyed it. It was one of these ones where I was just trying out the very first issue to see if I'm going to keep on getting it. And it's kind of like a Hellboy kind of thing, but I really liked it. I'm going to continue on with that series. I read Cowboy Ninja Viking, another first issue. I really liked that one too. That's just another, you know, crazy book that, you know, has got this guy with, I don't know, kind of like multiple things. It's just one of these wacky books that is fun for being wacky. It's got the artist who used to be on Proof, Riley Rossmo. He's not on Proof anymore, and I noticed in the solicits that Proof is going to be ending its run at like about issue 28 anyway, so that is going the way of the dinosaur. I read the latest issue of Iron Man, which is okay. I mean, they're kind of, you know, moving their way towards the end of that. The Mighty Avengers issue was really pretty good. I like what they're doing with Hank Pym in Mighty Avengers. They're doing some good stuff there. So when you get around to reading that one, I think you'll enjoy it. Read Spider-Woman number two. That's a good book too. It's, you know, they have a whole interview with Bendis at the end of that about how the Spider-Man comic and the Spider-Man motion comic are essentially the same but different. You know, it's like, oh, well, we're telling the same story, but there's certain different artwork and scenes, and we're, you know, getting a little more into Spider-Woman's head in the comic book, and it's a little more action-oriented in the motion comic, and it's like kind of, I really don't see why I would be compelled to read or get both versions of the same story.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it was two completely different things, maybe I'd be a little more compelled. Titanium Rain, double size relaunch came out this week, which, you know, I read number one a long time ago. So now I got read number one and number two. I reread number one, read number two. That's a really great book. I love the art, love the story in that. So good stuff came out this week. I got the Saint Walker and Atrocitus figures from the Green Lantern series. Got a Bi-Beast mini bust from Bowen. My wife was like, what the hell is that? Weird looking thing. You remember Bi-Beast?
Yeah.
From the Hulk.
Yeah.
So, oh, and I read Spider-Man, of course, Amazing Spider-Man 609. That's generally near the top of my stack. So there's some good stuff this week. Good stuff. And there's other stuff I didn't. Oh, Blackest Night Superman, number three, I read. I liked how they finished that one off. All three of the minis that they've had come out so far, they don't seem to actually have a complete sense of closure. Kind of like mini closure, where, you know, that little piece of the story has a small sense of closure to it, but...
Well, that chapter of the story ends, yeah. But it's clearly, yeah. the overall arc is nowhere near ending, yeah.
Right, so it's just kind of like, okay, now, you know, keep on reading more Blackest Night stuff. I like them. I think that if you're really hardcore into Blackest Night, they're great things to read, but there's... I don't think that they're essential in any way to someone who's reading Blackest Night and just wants to read Blackest Night and maybe the Green Lantern books, which is kind of a good thing.
I think
you're not losing anything there.
I think they've been doing a good balance between having the core story told in the core places and the supporting stuff, doing a good job of supporting it without being either redundant or superfluous. And it's a tough balance, because there have been times where some of these crossovers, like Civil War is a good example, I felt like reading the main series was just the cliff notes of all the other stuff elsewhere.
Right.
You know, whereas here, I think what they've done in Blackest Night Batman, Blackest Night Superman, is playing into the big picture without really overlapping it, and just kind of supplements it very nicely. Same with the Blackest Night Titans. Mm-hmm. So I think they're doing a really good job on managing this event and, you know, kind of parsing out the story in good chunks. And, you know, I feel like I'm getting my money's worth on all sides. And that's, mm-hmm. that's something they should be, you know, applauded for.
Yep. But good stuff came out this week.
Yeah. I've still got most of last week and the week before. So I've got tons to be reading. I'm just, you know, constantly behind at this point.
I'll also remind people that as you listen to this, our previews episode number 25 will be wrapping this coming Friday, which is November 6th. And we'll also be doing the preview Skype call on Friday night, November 6th at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. If you're interested in joining us on the previews call, get on Skype. You need to have a microphone. You need to have some way of listening. Usually a headset works good. We've got some instructions on the forum on how to get up on that. And you will just look for The John Mayo, THEJOHNMAYO, all one word, and ask to be added in. And anyone, we have the open submission policy for the previews episode, so anything that looks cool, go out to the forum, check the thread, see what people are calling dibs on, try to do something different. I'm calling dibs on some things where we're doing interviews, which will be the Fallen Angel Reborn trade paperback, Elephant Men number 24, and the Aladdin Legacy of the Lost, number one from Radical. We'll be having interviews on those on the previews interview episode that'll go up a week from Friday as you listen to this.
Sounds good. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that's it. Join us next week when we discuss World's Finest number one from DC, Fantastic Four number 572 from Marvel, and Hunter's Fortune number one from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.